You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, welcome to the Big Blue Big Board podcast. I am Dan Pizzuta, joined here by Chris Flump. Chris, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Starting to get into the nice days. We're getting close to the draft.
We are getting closer. It's coming, eventually. Only a couple weeks away. So, like all of these podcasts have for quite a while, we're talking a bunch of prospects. We're going to get into some questions we've gotten about some draft prospects and draft scenarios and things. We're going to get to that in a little bit. We're going to start by just talking about some of the visits the Giants have had lately with draft prospects and the private visits and the top 30 visits, players coming to the facility, and what that means, if anything, what players stand out from there. So as we look at the top 30 visits, and these are the guys, each team gets a list of guys they get to bring in to the facility. It's limited to 30, but there's a difference because some can be local visits and those don't count. It's, you know, it kind of can be confusing depending on what is considered local. Like Penn State for the Giants is considered local, so
somehow.
Yeah. What really matters is that the teams get to pick which players they want to come in. And as we've seen over the past, about 2 weeks since these visits have really started, is the Giants are definitely focusing on bringing in a lot of the top defensive players. Guys who have been brought in for visits include the top defensive guys all over the field. There's been the Quinnen Williams, Josh Allen. They brought in Nick Bosa just in case any of those three fall. You know, Clelin Ferrell has been in this week. You
know, Dexter Lawrence was in.
And most recently, they brought in Ed Oliver. So these visits, you know, don't mean these are who the Giants are going to be drafting, or these are who, you know, are at the top of the Giants board. I think last year only two guys they brought in of the top 30 visits were actually draft picks, and I think that was Barkley and Will Hernandez. I don't think they brought any of their other draft picks in as part of these visits last year, so I don't think there is a predictable aspect to who is bringing in, but it is interesting that these are the players who are being brought in right now.
Yeah, and there has been a little bit of a philosophy shift with respect to the top 30 visits from Jerry Reese to Dave Gettleman. Jerry Reese used to use these visits to get a closer look at some of the later round picks, the guys they might not have been able to make it to too many games or really kind of emerge during the draft process, and who they might not have as much tape on or have spent quite as much time on during the season or the preceding, 11 months of draft prep. With Dave Gettleman, he seems to be using these 30 visits to get a closer look at the guys at the top of his board. I'm not going to say whether one approach is better than the other, but it is kind of an interesting dichotomy between the two. So I think this does show where the Giants' concentration is going to be, even if they aren't especially predictive. They're definitely looking to use the top of their draft to bolster their defense. They have brought in very few offensive players, really just a couple quarterbacks. And for the most part, they have been front seven players. Basically, as we record this, the Giants are having a two-day visit with Devin Bush, linebacker out of Michigan, in addition to all the other top guys we've talked about, the edge rushers, the defensive tackles, all that. So I think that does kind of tell us where they might be looking, at least early on.
Yes, and we should note also within these visits, the quarterbacks have been there. They've brought in or will bring in just about all of the top quarterbacks, I think, except for Kyler Murray. I don't believe I've seen anything with them linked to bringing him in, unless I'm wrong there. But he's most likely to be long gone by the time the Giants pick. But I think every other quarterback they have been at least linked to talking to, and that includes Haskins, Drew Lock, Daniel Jones. I believe Will Greer was also in there. But for right now, we're going to focus on the defense because that increasingly seems like that is going to be where the Giants go at the sixth overall pick. And I feel like the more I think about it, and this was kind of, this had been kind of stewing in my brain for a little bit, but it kind of popped up as it was announced that Ed Oliver was going to be one of the Giants' visits this week, is that I'm having a hard time believing if the Giants are strictly a best player available team and they're going to draft that way, and Dave Gettleman has drafted that way, he says he will draft that way, I have a hard time believing that Ed Oliver shouldn't be the pick if that is how they're going to view how they draft.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I could see an argument for Brian Burns or Montez Sweat just based on the fact that they do have defensive tackles and they don't really have any proven edge rushers. However, roster depth has never been an obstacle for Dave Gettleman when it comes to the draft. He will draft to a position of strength and he will double down on it if he feels he's getting a good value. And just as a player, Ed Oliver is absolutely fascinating with just the amount of talent he has and the diversity of his skill set, and also how little it was used in Houston.
Yeah, I don't think we can really underrate how strange his fit in Houston was. So per Sports Info Solutions rookie handbook, Ed Oliver lined up at nose tackle, so over the center. And remember, Ed Oliver is a 280, 290, maybe a pound player.
And reportedly during the season, he was playing at about 270.
Yeah, so he lined up at nose tackle on 64.2% of his defensive snaps. And Dexter Lawrence, who is a 340-pound defensive lineman at Clemson, lined up at nose tackle 48.1% of his defensive snaps. So Oliver was consistently just over the center. He was consistently like double and triple teamed occasionally. Not a lot of players are double teamed as much as people say they are, but I think Oliver was that case. He was in the middle of the defensive line, like literally the middle on top of the center. He's the only player on that Houston defense that opposing offensive linemen really had to deal with. And that is part of what cut into Oliver's production. But he had an 11.7% pressure rate, which when you consider he was at the nose on over 64% of his snaps is actually kind of insane. And then you watch Oliver, You see how he tested. We always knew he was going to be a crazy good athlete. You get him into just any NFL scheme that is going to use him better than Houston did, and he is going to be just a complete monster.
Absolutely. And the thing with Oliver is he almost reminds me of Jason Pierre-Paul in that I'm not sure the testing accurately captured or completely captured his athleticism. His foot quickness and just agility and ability to move in space, he plays like a 220-pound linebacker whenever he has to go anywhere. Like, he can play as a three-dimensional player in space, but he explodes upfield like an edge rusher or just a classic three technique. You know, I'm starting to see comparisons of him to John Randall, and I don't hate that. Yeah. I've thought all along that if he can get his hands sorted out so he can really polish and fine-tune his technique and really finish his rushes, his upside is Aaron Donald. I don't want to say that's who he is going to be, but that's who he could be. And with that just agility and ability to play in space, I think a defensive coordinator like James Betcher, who likes to move players around, who likes to get creative with his pressure packages and all of that, he could have an absolute field day with a player like Oliver.
Yeah, placing Oliver with someone like Betcher, who would be able to move him around, Oliver would play 0% of his snaps at nose tackle. That's probably going to be the case for almost any NFL team that Oliver goes to that knows how to use him. But Betcher would be able to move him around between the 3-4 and 4-3, depending on, you know, how many people are on the line. And of course, that differs. You know, they're a 3-4 base, but that doesn't really mean anything, especially when you're a nickel. And a lot of times there are just four defensive linemen anyway. But moving Oliver around, he can play the traditional defensive tackle. You can put him out on the end, especially on a three-man line. He can handle himself there. He can get around the edge. You get him close to the ball, and he can work the center and the guard to sneak through. And I think when we start to talk about positional value and not necessarily whether, you know, in interior defensive lineman is up there in positional value, but I think the difference between Oliver and even like Christian Wilkins and the defensive tackles who are going to come next off the board, I think there is a significant gap, because Oliver can just be really special. And if you get that interior defensive pressure, I think that helps make the work for the edges a little easier, because you don't have as much resources on the offense that are accounting for what's going on in the edge, because you have to worry about that interior pressure. I'm not sure if that, you know, completely turns around a defense, especially with a defense like the Giants that has so many holes, but that's not something you should be passing up, because that absolutely has the chance to be something special there.
Yeah. And especially with a creative defensive coordinator, there's just so many possibilities with how you could use him. I could see them lining him up at nose tackle on occasion, you know, maybe 5% of his rushes at max, just to take advantage of his first step and just attack one of the A gaps, or maybe even force the offense to react and then send a double A gap blitz. Or you could line him up on the edge and use his explosiveness and agility. I mean, he had a better short shuttle than Saquon Barkley. That is just absurd. And you could even have him drop into coverage as part of a zone blitz. We used to see New England do it with Vince Wilfork. And if he can do it at about, I don't know, 400 pounds or so, then yeah, Ed Oliver definitely should be able to handle a short zone drop. The possibilities with him make him absolutely exciting as a prospect, even if there is still work to be done to get him up to his maximum potential.
Yeah, I mean, he's athletic enough to drop into coverage. I wouldn't want him to, and that's kind of why some of those rumors that NFL teams were talking to him about playing linebacker, kind of crazy to me. Which he probably athletically could handle it, but someone who is so good at disrupting the play close to the ball, you don't want to bring him further away from the ball. So that never really made sense to me. Yeah, there are, you know, some things to work on. I think a lot of that could just be putting him in a better scheme. But I think putting him like next to BJ Hill makes BJ Hill better. It's a part of a defensive line rotation. If you have then a Hill, Oliver, Dalvin Tomlinson, that is a nice little defensive line rotation there with the starting three that you could use. And you have Tomlinson in the middle and Oliver and Hill to each side. And that's probably not what your base personnel is going to be, but that's a decent defensive line before you even consider the edges. And I think that helps there, which is getting that pressure. And Oliver can play the run. That's, you know, not a concern. I think if you're super disruptive against the pass, especially the interior, the run defense is going to come whether you can do it or not, just by the ability to get into the backfield, the run defense is going to come.
I would also say that if he can hold up to a guard center double team as a nose tackle, he can handle an offensive tackle as a five technique. Yeah, he can set an edge and keep contain.
Yeah, there's so many possibilities there. And I think the deeper I've gotten into kind of starting to finalize my opinions on these prospects, now Oliver has just continued to be pushed up my board. And I really think if he's there, I don't really see how the Giants could pass that up if they're going to be best player available, because if they're doing a board correctly, Oliver should be high up there. And I think they have a system where he would be able to succeed. And again, when you just have a defense that has so many holes right now, just getting as many good players as possible and someone who could be as special as Oliver, I think would be a no-brainer pick if he's available.
Yeah, definitely. And like we said in our bonus podcast, that is, I suppose, the silver lining to how the Giants have conducted their offseason so far. They have put themselves in a position where they can go best player available without having to worry about need because, well, pretty much every position except for long snapper, kicker, and punter is a need, and running back.
Yeah, that's pretty much where they sit right now. So we are going to take a quick break and then come back with a few questions.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Okay. So we are back and we are just going to answer a few questions that we've gotten that have been sent to us. Most of them, I think all of them, draft related. So we're going to stick with the defense here. And this is a question. Are there any later round guys, especially on defense, that you think would help transition to the 3-4 and provide depth? Since we have a plethora of late rounders, I wanted to know if any names stuck out to you. Yeah, there are a couple. The transition to the 3-4, I'm not sure how much that really matters. One, the transition has kind of been made to this point. And also, like we said earlier in the show, the difference between 3-4 and 4-3, there's barely a difference anymore. There's so much nickel, there's so many players moving around. So the base defense just does not really matter as much as it used to.
It almost doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, for some teams, especially like Betcher, you do have the edge rushers standing up more than they would in, a traditional what the Giants would look like in 2007. Yeah, the defense is going to look a little different, but in terms of the actual personnel, it's not super different. But I think there are a couple like mid to late round guys that I like. We've talked about John Kaminsky before. He could be that, interior defensive end on a three-man line, or he could be a defensive end on a four-man line. He could play the interior there too. He's super athletic. Again, he's a small school guy from Charleston Southern. He tested quite well at 82nd percentile in Spark, which composite athletic testing. He's a guy that I could see the Giants looking at. He's listed 6'5", 290, so I think he can be that little tweener role. And tweener now, I think, is a positive. You used to say tweener as a negative where you can't figure out how to play these guys. I think tweener now is a positive where you realize how versatile these guys can be and you can play them in different places. So Kaminsky is a guy that really stands out for me there.
Yeah, I could bring up your guy, Ben Banigou, out of TCU. You know, for some reason, he is just consistently ranked in the mid or even late mid rounds on big boards. I'm not sure why. I think he could wind up going a lot earlier than maybe people suspect. But if he happens to slip, the Giants should definitely be in on him. Same with Christian Miller, edge out of Alabama. Another guy that we've talked about a few times who, again, just the mid rounds, he should be on the Giants radar. And I'm going to stay with edge and go with Justin Hollins out of Oregon. It's another player who really kind of surprised and tested off the charts. He wasn't getting much buzz during the season and the early part of the draft process, but just as an athlete, he stands out. He does stand out on tape, but most people don't watch Oregon's tape for defense, which I think might be why Ugo Amadi is also kind of flying below the radar. And he has also been productive. He missed his sophomore season, but since 2017, he's had 25.5 tackles for a loss, 11 sacks, 2 interceptions, 1 return for a touchdown, 6 passes defensed, and 7 forced fumbles. So that is solid production, especially when you have a guy who is just that athletic.
He's interesting. Another guy I like is Max Crosby of Eastern Michigan. He's 6'4", 255. He played a lot of just defensive end in a three-point stance 93.1% of the time, but super productive at EMU. A 16.2% pressure rate, tied with Brian Burns for the 7th highest pressure rate, but he also rushed 93% of the time. So when you see a high pressure rate like that with a guy who rushed a high percent of the time, that is very productive. So he could be type of a mid-round guy. He's one of those super athletic guys. He was 5th in this edge class in Spark. And when you mix that production with athleticism, that's where I think you can get these types of guys to hit.
Yeah, and just one last one, to maybe a name to keep an eye out for, is PJ Johnson out of Arizona. He's a defensive tackle, a big guy, which we know the Giants like, 6'4", 335, but he can actually get some things done behind the line of scrimmage. He only has 1 year at Arizona, which was last year. He got 31 total tackles, 8.5 tackles for a loss, 3 sacks, a pass defensed, and a forced fumble. And the Giants had him in for a top 30 visit. So they're at least a little bit curious about him. So that might be somebody to keep an eye on as well. And if they want depth at the nose tackle, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson he's not Snacks. Nobody is Snacks. But Dalvin Tomlinson is a good nose tackle. But you got to give the big guys a rest every now and again.
Yes, you do. And that's something the Giants have talked about. They want to have that deeper defensive line rotation. We'll move on to the next question. This is from Jim Singer. So I was wondering if Miles Boykin, the wide receiver from Notre Dame, has been on the Giants' radar at all. Thinking 3rd to 4th round, though I'm doubting he'll be around in the 4th. 6'4", 220, ran a 4.42 at the combine. Also has 43.5-inch vertical leap, 11-foot-8-inch broad jump. Low production numbers might keep from getting picked very high, but if a quarterback who could throw an accurate long ball, his numbers would be different. Good blocking wide receiver, which would be a plus. Do you think he would be of interest? So we have not seen actual physical interest yet, but I would not be surprised. If you listen to our positional drafts, we talked about the likelihood of the Giants taking a wide receiver. It's probably going to be, you know, in the middle rounds. Boykin's interesting for me. I'm not totally sure where I fall on him right now. He is super athletic. The 99.9 percentile of Spark. That is insane. He is a crazy good athlete. The thing for me, though, is I think athleticism matters maybe the least amount for wide receivers. I mean, it certainly helps. And if you use your athleticism to be good, then that is incredible. But I don't necessarily think you need athleticism to be a good wide receiver, like I think you probably do like at edge. And also, I don't think athleticism covers up not being a good wide receiver, kind of like it might at a position like edge. Boykin athleticism, it did not always translate to production. And in terms of, you know, the quarterback play, that's what I try to take out of the equation in when I put together target yards added, because I take the wide receiver's yards per target and then look at what the quarterback does to everyone else. So that's kind of trying to isolate the quarterback play, because it's putting everyone else in there too. And it's kind of seeing what the production is like just to that wide receiver. And Boykin comes in just 28th at 0.69. And when someone is below one, that's when I start to raise a bit of a red flag and kind of wonder why. His 2.1 yards per route run is one of the lower numbers in this group. He ran deep pretty often, 53.7%. He lined up in the slot, 20.8%, so he does have some versatility there. And so I'm still not sure where I fall on him. He's super athletic. That is great. I'm not sure that totally matters for wide receivers, though.
No, Ed. You know, as you know, guys like Emory Hunt or Dan Hatman are kind of fond of saying, is that size is not a skill. And I think we could extend that to athleticism. It doesn't really matter how fast you can run if you're not running a good route. You know, if you're rounding your brakes off and you know, just not running your route accurately, you could be nowhere near where the quarterback thinks you should be when you're supposed to be there, and not able to get separation with your route, which makes it easier for defensive backs to cover you, who are also going to be really good athletes. So the skill is in how you use your physical abilities. That being said, I imagine Boykin would be on the Giants' radar, especially if he starts to slip a little bit, just because Dave Gettleman loves size. He, especially in wide receivers. And also the Giants don't really have an X receiver right now. They've got Benny Fowler and Cody Latimer, but I can't say that they're going to be scaring anybody or, you know, really inspiring a whole lot of confidence. So I could see them taking a chance on a player like Boykin and maybe hoping that they could coach him up and work on kind of the deficiencies in his game. I will say that Matt Harmon does like Boykin, and the reception perception does like him. So for me, that is a point in his favor.
Yeah, and I mean, Gettleman does like size. You know, you can see that with some of his previous picks, like you know, the Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin, although he did shift to Curtis Samuel as his last wide receiver pick before he was fired in Carolina. So there was a shift there to a shorter, speedier type of guy. But yeah, so I mean, the athleticism is there, especially with that size. But I think, you know, more than that, it matters if you can get open. One of my favorite wide receivers in the NFL is Keenan Allen, who is not super fast, not super athletic, but he might be the best wide receiver in the NFL at just getting open and figuring out how to win against cornerbacks. And he is incredibly good at that, and he has brought that into a very productive career after running like a 4.7 or something. But I think if you want that size and you want, you know, someone who can also get open, like I think JJ Arcega-Whiteside would be a better option, who is also a tall, has that contested catch ability, ran a 4.49 at his pro day, and also just has the ability to get open. Go to and scroll down through my Twitter. I posted a couple videos of Arcega-Whiteside after his just during the day of his pro day when I was just kind of diving a little more into watching his games, and he is just so good off the line. He can win easily off the line, and a lot of corners just aren't ready for it, and he knows how to create separation off the line. So he's someone I continue to like a lot. So I think there is that option there. I believe the Giants are going to take a wide receiver, at least in the middle rounds. I would not be surprised if Boykin is there. He probably would not be my top target there, but I would not be surprised if he is one.
Agreed.
All right, so we got one more, and this kind of this ties into some of what the Giants did last year and what they might do this year. And it was a year ago, Bradley Chubb was touted as possibly the best defensive player in the 2018 draft, and he went on to have an outstanding rookie season. How good is this year's crop of front seven defensive prospects in comparison with Chubb? Where would he stack up if he were coming out in 2019? This is an interesting question, because I think Bradley Chubb was good. Part of the context we have to have with his rookie season is he did get to line up opposite Von Miller, which does help.
Yeah, that's a hell of a luxury for a rookie edge rusher.
But, you know, Bradley Chubb was very good, and was very good in a draft class that did not have huge amount of other productive edge rushers.
Basically Chubb and then everyone else. I kind of had Chubb and Harold Landry ranked about the same coming into the year, but Chubb took a step forward and Landry spent the year dealing with injuries and didn't do that. But so it was basically Bradley Chubb and then everyone else.
Yeah, Bradley Chubb got taken fifth, and then it was Marcus Davenport at 14, and then like another edge didn't go until Harold Landry at 41. So Bradley Chubb was fifth. There might be three edge rushers taken by five in this draft. So where he goes, I'd put him behind Nick Bosa. I think you could maybe split it with Josh Allen, depending on how you view the versatility. I think Allen's a little better in coverage. You can drop him back as a linebacker a little more and move him around. So I think he would be up there, I think. But I think that's an interesting piece of a what if for the Giants, because if they had taken maybe Bradley Chubb at two, they would have that edge rusher. Maybe last year would have been a little better with him opposite
Olivier Vernon.
Not as good as Von Miller, but it's similar where he wouldn't have to be the number one guy. Because now if the Giants draft an edge rusher, they're going to have to be the number one guy now. They're not going to have the luxury of really lining up from across from anybody for help. So, you know, if the Giants had taken him at two, do they not have to go edge here and they could maybe, you know, maneuver around a little more and not feel compelled to take an edge possibly at six, which is what it looks like they're going to do. So I think Chubb is in that top tier. I don't think they would have been, you know, sacrificing anything for if they had possibly taken him last year and missing out on this class. I don't think there is super big difference there. I mean, I like Bosa better, but the Giants probably aren't going to draft Bosa anyway. So I think he definitely belongs in that top tier.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm with you. I would have him behind Bosa just for versatility. I would probably have him behind Josh Allen as well, because Allen can do just so much. He's good going downhill and getting after the passer, but he can also be disruptive dropping into coverage. And that is a good bonus to have just from a game planning perspective. He would probably be in that group with, you know, Brian Burns, Montez Sweat, Clelin Ferrell, where you've got this lump of really good and athletic pass rushers who all have good technique. They can play the run, although there's some question about that with Burns. I'm not overly concerned about it. And I suppose it would just come down to what the team that drafts him, or what team picking where values what traits.
Yeah, and that's really the big question with the edge rushers in this class of, you know, what traits do you value the most? And there's, you know, there is a player for whatever trait that is. So I think when we look at what the Giants are probably going to get at six, depending on what they're valuing, they are going to get someone good who will fit whatever they're doing. I don't think they're, you know, going to be forced into an edge pick just because there are so many good ones. Like last year, if you needed an edge, you had to draft Bradley Chubb. Or you had to do what the Saints did and trade up half a round to get Marcus Davenport because he was the second best edge in that class. That's not going to have to be the case this year, which I guess does help the Giants with figuring out, you know, what traits they want to focus on because they're going to be able to get a player that fits that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the big difference just comparing last year's edge class and this year's edge class isn't that Bradley Chubb is better or worse than any of these top guys. It's really more that this top tier is so much more densely populated.
Yeah, that is absolutely the case. I mean, this is one of the best edge classes we've seen in quite some time. There might be, you know, seven or eight taken in the first round. There were four taken in the first two rounds last year.
Yeah, it's, I've said it before, I'll say it again, this entire front seven class is just filthy.
Okay, so we are going to end that there. Thank you for the questions. If you guys have other questions, feel free to send them in on Twitter or through email. You know, please do that, because that also helps us to figure out what you guys want to talk about. We've been, you know, just bringing draft topics to the table since November. So if you guys have something that you would like us to talk about, please let us know. And you can find this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review if you have not. That helps us out greatly. Follow our work on BigBlueView.com. Follow Big Blue View on Twitter at Big Blue View. Follow Big Blue View on Instagram at Big_Blue_View. You follow me on Twitter at Dan Pizzuta. You can follow Chris on Twitter at RaptorMKII. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.